Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help, and you can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right, a real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discovery.com/creditcard. Hi, Bridget here. The other podcast that I make with Mozilla about AI called IRL was nominated for an Anthem Award. It would mean so much to me if you could take just a few seconds and vote for IRL to win. Just go to tangodi.com/IRL or use the link in our show notes. You can vote until December 21st. Thank you so much. It means a lot. There Are No Girls on the Internet is a production of iHeartRadio and Unbossed Creative. I'm Bridget Todd, and this is There Are No Girls on the Internet. I am here with my producer, Joey. Joey, it's nice to see you back. We missed you.
Hi, it's nice to see you too.
So as y'all know, we are trying to start every episode with a little bit of light banter to sort of ease us into the episode. I tried my hardest to do it last week. We bantered.
Did a good job.
Yeah, banter was had. Listener Susan actually emailed us with a great banter suggestion of using the time to sort of get to know our producers, because we hear from Joey, we hear from Mike. Listeners don't necessarily know who these folks are, even though I feel like, you know, I'm talking to them all the time. So to do that, let's play a little bit of my favorite game, Would You Rather. Would You Rather is one of my favorite games. I play it endlessly on car trips. I've annoyed all my friends. I'll text Would You Rathers. Okay. Would you rather be able to use the internet only for 20 minutes every day, or you can use it like normal, but your boss gets a detailed report of everything you did online every day?
Oh my God. I gotta think about that. Now I'm like, what do I do on the internet? What do I, like, I feel like I need to go through. Okay, that's rough. Like, this is my problem. I get way too, I love these things, but also then I spend too much time being like, but what would I do? Like, really? What if this was real? I don't know. But I think my boss is pretty chill. So I'm thinking of like my boss currently. Hi, Maya, if you're listening to this. But like, I wouldn't, like, I feel like that would be fine. Like, I wouldn't, like, there's nothing she would just sort of be like, all right, whatever.
Like, Maya wouldn't even look.
I do spend like an embarrassing amount of time on like Twitter. So like, I don't really know if I want that, like, out into the world. I'm going to say tentatively, I think my boss gets a detailed report on what I did on the internet. Just because I can't, like, the idea of only having 20 minutes on the internet, like, I'm like, that is not, I don't, beyond even just, like, the normal stuff, I, like, need to look up, like, I don't know how to like function. Like, I don't think I've ever cooked a meal without ever having to like look up something like really stupid. Like, I don't know. But yeah, that's my answer. What about you, Bridget?
Oh my,
what about you?
Well, I'm my own boss. Oh, so that's okay. What doesn't really apply. I will say, to your point about like the things that I have to Google when I'm cooking, like a tablespoon is, you know, how many cups in a tablespoon? Like things I feel like I should have learned in grammar school. Like if another human got to see the level of inane things that I have to check via Google, I will be very embarrassed.
Yeah. Oh, the other one recently, I've been working on a project currently that's making me go through some like JSTOR articles and some like really academic stuff, which is super fun. I love doing that stuff. Like, honestly, like that's kind of shit I'll nerd out over. However, it's been a minute since I've read like academic articles, and there's a lot of words that I've had to Google just like that are like weird words. Like, I feel like my recently, it's either that or like if I'm writing something and I'll be like, I keep spelling this word wrong. Those are usually like stupid ones. Like, that's usually like, I can't remember how to spell like schedule or something. Like, I don't know. That might be a little embarrassing, but you know what? Yeah, I can't, I don't know what words mean. I think, but that's.
Okay, so here at There Are No Girls on the Internet, we have been watching the Republican debate so that y'all don't have to. It has been interesting and frustrating. I would say like 80% of what comes up on the Republican debate so far has been like stunts or scams or grandstanding or conspiracy theories. And then maybe like 20% is actual policy discussions. Genuinely, when I watched it this week, I had to turn it off for a little while and like collect myself and then return to it. So technology has come up in most of these debates, specifically whether or not TikTok should be banned. Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley has been all in on banning TikTok. And in this week's debate, she dropped a startling statistic that just 30 minutes spent on TikTok makes people 17% more anti-Semitic.
We really do need to ban TikTok once and for all. And let me tell you why. For every 30 minutes that someone watches TikTok, every day, they become 17% more anti-Semitic, more pro-Hamas based on doing that.
Which is like a pretty big claim. So whenever I hear a candidate make like a clear, specific claim like that, you got to dig into it to find more, right? Because it should be pretty cut and dry, right? Like, find the stat, confirm whether it's accurate or not. So I thought this is going to be a straightforward fact check for y'all. When I tell you this was so much more complicated. So that 17% figure that Haley cited actually came from a data analysis shared on Twitter on November 30th by Anthony Goldblum. Goldblum is the former CEO of a data science platform called Kaggle. I looked into Goldblum. He is like a macroeconomist from Australia. So first, Haley misstated what Goldblum's analysis found. Goldblum's analysis suggests that people who spend 30 minutes a day or more on TikTok are 17% more likely than others to hold anti-Semitic or anti-Israel views. We'll come back to that point in just a moment. For comparison, according to this analysis, use of Instagram for 30 minutes a day was associated with a 6% increase in the likelihood of anti-Semitic views, and the use of Twitter for 30 minutes a day was associated with a 2% increase in likelihood. Side note, when Goldblum tweeted this, you know Elon Musk was in the thread being like, interesting, this says that actually Twitter is not a big driver of anti-Semitism. You don't say, that's great for me, unsurprisingly. So Haley has definitely misstated the conclusions of this analysis. She said during the debate, for every 30 minutes that somebody watched TikTok. And that's simply not what this analysis suggests. The stated conclusions of the analysis are that people who spend 30 minutes or more on TikTok every day are 17% more likely to hold anti-Semitic attitudes. What it does not suggest is that spending 30 minutes on TikTok will bolster someone's anti-Semitic views.
By 17%. So she's just,
by 17%, which is like, that's like a real, like...
How does one get 17? I would love for an interviewer to ask Nikki Haley how exactly somebody gets 7, like, what is the metric to measure that? What is 17% more anti-Semitic than what you previously were? That's, yeah.
So I think that's why what you said, I think that's exactly why people are really responding to this on Twitter. Like, people are like, like, what is the metric that you're using? Like, how are you quantifying this? Had I been the moderator of that debate, I would have definitely pressed her, because it's like, you can't drop a stat like that. And then you just like, oh, well, 17%, my. Anyway, moving on. Like, that's really a stat that, like, she clearly got it from somewhere. And so I do think the moderators, it would have behooved them to ask a little bit more about where that stat came from. So she is just flat out misstating what that analysis actually said. But then there's the issue of the analysis itself that is a bit more complicated. So I want to be super clear that I am, like, no researcher. I don't have an educational background in this at all. But our producer, Mike, has a PhD and does survey research for a living. I had Mike take a look at the analysis, and he raised a few questions. First, Goldblum does not describe his methods in the survey. So we don't know a ton about how he came to these conclusions around that 17% figure. It's entirely possible that these methods are perfectly sound, but because when he shared his analysis, he did not also share his methods, we have no idea, and we can't even look into it to say. This was not a study published in a scientific journal. It is just an analysis that somebody posted on Twitter and GitHub. So definitely, like, keep that in mind when thinking about this stat. Second is the way that Goldblum framed the survey questions to determine how often the people responding to the survey use TikTok. According to his data, 90% of all respondents use TikTok at least once a day, which is certainly not representative of the larger United States population. He also did not control for age. You know, we know that folks who use TikTok tend to skew younger. And we also know that younger people tend to be more sympathetic to Palestinians. So in his correlational study, in which he didn't control for age at all, it is possible that the entire effect is driven by the fact that the people who use TikTok tend to be younger than the people who don't. We just don't know. So another point that I wanted to make, which this is coming from noted non-researcher me, Bridget, and not researcher Mike, is the way that Goldblum correlates anti-Israel views with anti-Semitic views. On Twitter, Goldblum fleshed this out, saying TikTok users are more likely to believe Jewish people are dishonest in business, are disloyal to America, and have too much power in media. They are also more likely to disagree that Israel has a right to defend itself against those who want to destroy it. And I guess I just have questions about this framing that puts very clear anti-Semitic tropes like Jewish people have too much power alongside specific policy opinions about the state of Israel to make the overall claim about TikTok users being anti-Semitic. I just have questions about how those survey questions are being understood in this analysis.
Yeah. That's definitely, like, the biggest red flag for me. I'm also not a, you know, professional researcher. I did, however, go to journalism school, and they teach us a lot about, you know, not asking leading questions or not how framing questions in a specific way, like, kind of determines how, like, I don't know. I learned that in, like, AP stats too. Like, that's a pretty basic concept. And this is, like, what it does whenever you have something that's talking about anti-Semitism and you are also roping in the most basic questions about Israel and the Israeli military and, like, yeah, like this said, specific policy questions, like, that is so much more complicated than just simply asking about anti-Semitism, and also then what it ends up doing is falsely equivocating any sort of criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism, which is not true. It is not, like, look, like, we're in the middle, I mean, and I think now, especially now, we're seeing this, like, there's a lot of, like, people that are Jewish that are very critical of Israel or Zionism or, like, the Israeli state. There are people I know that, like, I mean, I don't know, I have family members that aren't even, like, super, that are definitely, like, Zionists, that are definitely more pro-Israel, but, like, they're very critical of the Israeli state because the state is currently, like, has a super far-right government in charge. But yeah, no, that is a weird, like, I think that to me, just hearing that he put those two things together and use that as one sort of set of data and to make, like, one assumption about whether or not people are anti-Semitic and hold anti-Semitic views, that to me disqualifies the entire results of the survey, because if you're not making that distinction, you're not going to get accurate results.
Yeah, and I want to be clear, like, I am fully ready to believe that it's possible that TikTok drives harmful attitudes like anti-Semitism. We already know that TikTok, like, this is something that happens on social media platforms. This is not like a surprise. Media Matters did an analysis that found that TikTok recommends users content that is misogynistic and deeply transphobic and uses that kind of uses transphobia and misogyny as a entry point to lead them down far right rabbit holes. And so that is a thing, right? But I wanted to bring this up because I do think it says something about our current like political and media climate right now. It is very weird to me that someone running for office, running for president, could clearly and specifically state something as a clear fact based on just an analysis that somebody put out there on Twitter. And that claim would be this difficult and complicated to verify. You know, I've seen people like dismissing Haley's claims, which I also like kind of understand because it does. Like when I was looking into this, I was ready to be like, what did Nikki Haley completely misunderstand? Or like, where did she pull this completely ridiculous stat from? I thought it was going to be like a made up stat that she just like fabricated. And I'm realizing now that like, that isn't necessarily the case. And I actually do think it matters how platforms are shaping and stoking social attitudes. But I wish that we could have that conversation in a way that doesn't misstate findings or that doesn't spotlight, you know, analysis that's just murky. Murky in the sense of like, it's not clear how it was gathered, right? So like, I don't think that this is actually helping us to get there. And I actually would be curious to have that conversation.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think this is a weird one because I also, yeah, I think my immediate, I'd seen that, like I saw that clip on Twitter and my immediate response was just like, oh my God, like, of course, Nikki Haley's saying some weird stuff. But yeah, no, it definitely is indicative of something. And I think it also, like, the fact that, like, something like TikTok that's just a platform has been politicized so much, like that makes it so hard to actually analyze like what we're talking about and analyze the way that, yeah, like what there is a conversation to be had about these sites like stoking hate and like not just anti-Semitism, but like, yeah, like racism, transphobia, homophobia, misogyny. There is a conversation to be had there. It is important that we like figure out ways to address that problem. But like, there's so many intersecting issues here. A, it's the fact that TikTok's been politicized and it's so hard to actually do that research when it's been politicized in this way. And then on the other hand, like, I think this is why it is so important to distinguish between what is actually anti-Semitic and what is simply criticism of Israel that's not necessarily anti-Semitic. Because it's so, like, I feel like I'm having this, this has been a frustrating thing lately when trying to find just, like, statistics and info about anti-Semitism in particular, is that so much of it is so hard to, like, really get real clear answers just because, yeah, so many people, whether just sort of by assumption or, like, with a specific agenda, have included criticism of Israel or have included criticism of Zionism within their analysis of anti-Semitism. And I'm not saying, like, again, not saying that there aren't criticisms of Israel and Zionism out there that turn into anti-Semitic talking points. Obviously, that is a thing too, and that is bad. But, like, those, you should be addressing those as anti-Semitism and because of the anti-Semitism they got, not because they're just criticizing a government that is separate from just a group of people that share an identity. But yeah, that is, it's weird. It is a weird, like, it's one of those, I feel like this is another one of those things where, like, somebody on the Republican Party says something really weird, and it's, like, a meme for a bit, and then you, like, we all think about it, like, a week later, and are like, oh no, this is bad. Like, these are, and again, like, this is somebody running for president of the United States. Yeah. Also, I'm sorry. I don't, like, this is the, like, the Republican Party, this is, y'all are the, like, Jewish Space Lasers party. Like, you can't be out here being, like, it's TikTok that's making people anti-Semitic. Like, I don't know. That's calls coming from inside the house. Like, yeah, it's weird.
I was literally just thinking that when you were saying that, I was thinking the same line. Yeah. Like, that call might be coming from inside some of the houses on that one. Let's take a quick break. Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
So in 2024, one of my goals is to finally get serious about my finances. It's been kind of a big emotional thing for me. Thinking about money historically has caused me a lot of anxiety and stress because I have a lot of trauma related to money. And if you can relate, if that sounds like you, check out Fearless Finance. Fearless Finance provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour. It's a new way to get financial advice without all the headaches, high fees, and commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. Fearless Finance planners don't sell anything. No used car salesman vibe here. And that means no concerns about being sold something just for the commission that it earns a rep. Their planners meet you where you are on your financial journey. No judgment, whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to make sure your finances are okay. They can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals. No question is too small. No problem is too big. Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually, and they charge by the hour. Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit. And you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use code GIRLS. And we're back. So we got to talk about this Amazon lawsuit. Quick heads up that this conversation does involve the sexual exploitation of a minor. So 2 years ago, a Brazilian teenager was participating in a foreign exchange student program. So she was living with a host family in West Virginia. And while she was there, she discovered that her host family or someone in the host family had put a spy camera purchased from Amazon in her bathroom to obtain intimate footage of her in the bathroom. So now she is suing Amazon for selling a product that was advertised for potentially illicit uses and was allegedly flagged to Amazon's product safety team, which her suit says inspected the sale of that camera on their platform 3 times and still failed to prevent the severe foreseeable harms that still affect her today. I'm sure those harms do affect her today. That is horrible. So Amazon filed a motion to dismiss the case back in March, but this week, the judge hearing the case did not buy most of Amazon's arguments. So the case will proceed to discovery and maybe even a trial. The judge let 4 claims stand: negligence, product liability, torts of outrage, which is the intentional infliction of emotional distress, and civil conspiracy. But the judge did dismiss a racketeering claim against Amazon. So this case is super disturbing to me. And it also highlights that Amazon's marketplace does knowingly sell things that are pretty obviously not just used for illegal, harmful behavior, but basically like advertised that they can be used for that illegal, harmful behavior. The camera that her host family had bought on Amazon is called Hidden Clothes Hook Camera. It's a camera that is meant to look like a hook that you would hang a towel on in a bathroom. And in fact, images that appear in the marketing on Amazon's website advertising the camera show a bunch of bath towels, and they have copy that says, quote, it won't attract any attention, underlined, and a very ordinary hook. Yuck. So it's pretty clear, like, what they are advertising, right? Like, side note on this, I have seen products for sale on Amazon that could be used for other kinds of illicit purposes, but they actually are not super explicit about this. Like, when you buy a scale on Amazon that could be used to weigh drugs, for instance, on Amazon, they'll show like a tiny piece of green lettuce being weighed on that scale, not like a piece of marijuana, because they don't want to advertise it can be used for weighing marijuana. So it's like a roundabout way of them not advertising that this can be used for illicit behavior.
I'm not going to lie. I totally forgot that it's still technically illegal to buy weed in most states.
So
like,
did I.
Was like, what? And I was like, oh, yeah, right.
Every time I leave, like, one of the handful of cities that I spend a lot of time in, like, D.C., New York City, Brooklyn, Virginia, I'm like, oh, yeah. I don't find myself in those places often, but when I am, I'm like, oh, yeah, y'all don't do that down here.
Yeah. No, it's so weird. It is, like, I don't know, whole other tangent. Yeah, no, I had a friend visiting recently from a state where it is not legal, and they were just like, what? Like, we could just, there's just like a store across the street we can go to? Yeah, no, it's, anyways.
So I do think that marketing is a pretty good argument for the fact that Amazon was well aware what this product was being used for and like how it was being, like what use case it was being advertised to be used for. Which is exactly what the lawsuit argues too. The lawsuit says that Amazon's product safety team was aware that the closed hook camera was intended for unlawful purposes, citing exactly what I just read, the marketing that says that the hidden camera will not attract attention from the victim, who would presumably hang a towel to be used in drying her undressed body. The complaint reads, "The intended use of this spy camera, as explicitly portrayed on Amazon's online retail store, e.g. as a towel hook in the bathroom to secretly record undressed individuals without their consent, is a federal felony and also a crime under West Virginia law." So the judge didn't outright dismiss the case against Amazon because the judge said, quote, "Amazon approved product description suggesting consumer use of the spy cam to record private moments in the bathroom. Amazon cannot claim shock when a consumer does just that." So there are plenty of like non-creepy reasons that somebody might put a camera in their home. I have a lot of issues with it, but my mom has cameras all over her house because my dad is disabled and like might be in another room and need help. But those cameras are not disguised as bathroom hooks. Professor Eric Goldman, who runs the Tech and Marketing Law blog, said that this ruling could potentially change the way that spy cams are sold through online retailers like Amazon. He writes, "The court's analysis could indicate that all surreptitious hook cameras are categorically illegal to sell, even when buyers plan to use them completely legally. That makes this a dangerous ruling for the spy cam industry and for Amazon. At the same time, I'm curious to hear more about what Amazon's product safety team thought when it evaluated this item, because according to the suit, they evaluated it 3 times and still allowed it on their platform." And I do think it kind of goes back to what we were talking about when we talked about TikTok Shop. Like, I don't think that platforms should just be off the hook. Like, I don't think that they should be able to knowingly profit from the sale of items that make clear that what their intended use is for is something that is illegal and super harmful.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, honestly, the whole idea of having a camera that you can disguise as like a clothing hook, like, I don't know. I can't think of any situation where you would need that, where it, like, it seems justifiable to, I don't know. Like, honestly, like, I feel like that is something that you only use to, like, get footage of people without their permission. And, like, this is usually the outcome of that. Like, I don't know. I feel like specifically just designing it as, like, a hook. Like, I don't see any argument for why that's something that somebody would need. The whole idea of, like, hidden camera, which comes up on the show, like surveillance and like hidden cameras, like we're all way too comfortable with this idea of hidden cameras. I seriously, like, it seems really strange to me, and it seems like this is just, we're gonna see more and more of this happening and more like of these kind of stories.
Joey, don't even get me started. You know, it's holiday season. I'm sure people are gonna be buying all kinds of cameras and devices with cameras and recording devices to be given to their loved ones to like put in their home so that Amazon can misuse, as they have done. They settled a lawsuit about their staff using cameras to like peep at consumers, or so that police can get your information. Yeah. Like, don't do it.
Don't do that.
Take it from me. Like loved your loved ones more than giving them the gift of surveillance. Give them the gift of privacy instead. So we talk a lot about the IRL consequences of misinformation online on the show, and That means that we really have to take a look at what's happening in Ireland. So last week in Dublin, social media-fueled disinformation turned into a situation with very real-world consequences. Three young children and a woman were injured in a knife attack near a school in Dublin last week. The suspect was apprehended. I think it was like a situation where like people walking by, people nearby, just all helped to apprehend the suspect and help the victims. The motive was, according to police, entirely unclear. However, according to the New York Times, the police said that the attack was followed by destructive riots that they blamed on the far right weaponizing misinformation about the knife attack. So the evening after the attack, chaotic scenes broke out in the city after a group of rioters attacked police vehicles and set fires. Videos from that scene showed like stores being broken into, police cars and buses being set on fire, people clashing with police officers, all of that. In the wake of that attack, far right figures were using social media to spread rumors about the nationality of the attacker. And one protester said that, quote, Irish people are being attacked by these scum. Drew Harris of the Dublin Police suggested that they were being driven by misinformation online about the knife attack being spread for what he called malevolent purposes. Ireland's president, Michael D. Higgins, said that the idea that the attack would be used or abused by groups with an agenda attacks the principle of social inclusion and is reprehensible, referring to these far-right protesters, and that it deserves condemnation by all who believe in the rule of law and democracy. So that happened last week. Now this week, social media platforms were being taken to task for what happened. The Independent, which is where I get most of my news about what's happening in Ireland, had a really comprehensive breakdown of what happened, which we'll throw in the show notes. Irish politician Taoiseach Michael Martin said he was concerned about the rapid mobilization of so many people via social media platforms. So Facebook, TikTok, and Google, which all have Dublin headquarters, appeared before the Iritez Media Company to discuss disinformation, media literacy, and the response to the chaos in Dublin. So guess who didn't even bother to show up to that committee to talk about what happened? Can you guess?
I have sneaking suspicion. It might be one formerly known as Twitter. All right.
You are right. So that's what Elon Musk has not done now, which is that he didn't even show up to this committee. And the politicians who were running this thing were not having it.
Yeah, he doesn't have to answer to the American government. Why would he have to answer to the Irish government, you know?
Fine Gael TD, Kieran Cannon, encouraged Twitter employees to drop an email to the owner of Twitter, Elon Musk, suggesting that he desist from commenting on affairs within Ireland, which he patently knows nothing about. He also added that Elon Musk personally served to stoke up hatred and conflict in recent times here in Ireland, and that he should be deeply ashamed of those actions. Let him know, Cannon.
Yeah. I would not fuck with the Irish, like, with this sort of thing, too. Like, Elon Musk, I feel like that would also be very poetic justice if this was what led to the Elon Musk downfall. And I think that would be really funny. But probably won't, unfortunately.
Yeah, you don't want this. You don't want that. You don't want smoke with the Irish. I can tell you that right now, Elon Musk. This is not a fight you want to pick.
They've gone through so much.
So the platforms who did actually show up kind of gave the usual song and dance. I got to say, like, I was sort of heartened to hear what TikTok said that they had done in light of this incident. So Susan Moss, the head of public policy for TikTok Ireland, said that TikTok had activated its crisis management protocols to remove violating content and to prevent the spread of misinformation. She said, "We activated our emergency fact-checking procedure in collaboration with those fact-checkers. We have a fact-checking organization here in Ireland. And what they did is that they were flagging content, not just on TikTok, but horizon scanning across the internet and flagging to us these individual claims that they were seeing. That helped us to stop the content spreading on TikTok." She said that there were 25 individual claims or type of stories that she saw moving across the platform. And she did say that she felt that TikTok's response had been very fast moving and that she was very confident in it. But then contrast that with Facebook. So Facebook said that they removed 1,000 pieces of misinformation from the platform in the first half of this year, which, I'm sorry, that is not a lot. Like, 1,000 pieces of misinformation is just not a lot. And also, it just doesn't work like that. Like, trust me, this was my, like, flagging individual pieces of misinformation for removal was my job at one point in my life. And I can tell you that job was the equivalent of playing whack-a-mole. Like, even if it's removed, which is better than nothing, it just pops back, it pops right back up. And so Facebook saying like, oh, this piecemeal strategy that we already know is not really that effective, that was our main line of defense. That is shocking to me and like almost laughable. They also said that they use debunking labels on false content, which we also know isn't always that effective. Like, again, it's better than nothing, but they're like using these tactics that we have known for a while are not necessarily the most effective. Lawmakers also asked specifically about the issue of a voice note that was being shared on the Facebook-owned messaging app WhatsApp calling for immigrants to be killed and asked if there was a failure to curb it from spreading like wildfire. I will say that WhatsApp being a closed platform where the messages are encrypted means that like tackling harmful or inaccurate information there is like a specific, unique challenge. Like, that is true. But I was really surprised by just how not robust what Facebook was offering was in comparison to what TikTok was saying that they were doing. Like they're very different platforms, but I just can't believe that like this is what Facebook brought to these lawmakers in Ireland after such chaos that these folks say was sparked by social media platforms.
Well, you know, TikTok's too busy making everybody 17% more anti-Semitic for every 30 minutes you spend on TikTok. Not to go back to that, but now I'm wondering, is it you get progressively more anti-Semitic like the more 30 minute chunks go by? But yeah, see, the TikTok's too busy. They can't be spreading misinformation in Ireland.
So if you use an hour, if you use a TikTok for an hour a day, are you like 34% more anti-Semitic? Like, how does it work?
Is there like I want a graph. I want a chart. I want the full. Again, I took AP stats. I know how this is supposed to work. I'm like, but there definitely is something. I mean, like, and not to give TikTok too much credit, because again, they're a big social media company that, you know, deserves much of the criticism it gets. But like, it really is. Says something. I feel like that TikTok is under fire so much, like in the news cycle, and it's like, and yet they seem to be the only platform that's like responding to these kind of things. You know, I guess everybody makes fun of the fact you can't say like there's certain words you can't say on TikTok. Like, people started saying like unalived instead of killed and stuff like that. But like, it's, I don't know, it's like something to be said about the fact that I'm like, TikTok at least has that in place, but like no other social media company apparently has any interest in doing anything to moderate its content, I guess.
I agree. And I think it really demonstrates how it really isn't about one specific platform. And so conversations like the one that happened on the GOP debate stage this week that make it about one singular platform are just deeply missing the point, right? It is about having a safer, robust digital landscape. And that is a conversation that involves lots of platforms and a lot more, but just making it about making one singular platform the boogeyman is just like not how we get to a safer media landscape, where the kind of thing that happened in Dublin does not happen anywhere else, which should be the goal.
Exactly, yeah.
More after a quick break. Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at RailsToTrails. So in 2024, one of my goals is to finally get serious about my finances. It's been kind of a big emotional thing for me. Thinking about money historically has caused me a lot of anxiety and stress because I have a lot of trauma related to money. And if you can relate, if that sounds like you, check out Fearless Finance. Fearless Finance provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour. It's a new way to get financial advice without all the headaches, high fees, and commitments. that come with traditional financial advisors. Fearless finance planners don't sell anything. No used car salesman vibe here. And that means no concerns about being sold something just for the commission that it earns a rep. Their planners meet you where you are on your financial journey. No judgment, whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to make sure your finances are okay. They can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals. No question is too small. No problem is too big. Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually, and they charge by the hour. Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit. And you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use code GIRLS.
Tired of hair removal tools that just don't cut it? Conair Girl Bomb gives you smooth, flawless results while putting you firmly in control. From achieving that silky smooth skin to boosting your inner confidence, Conair Girl Bomb is all about helping you elevate your self-care game. Whether it's creating a hype playlist, throwing yourself into a hobby, or scheduling some me time, self-care is important to keeping you feeling confident and empowered. It's time to take your hair removal routine to the next level. You can trust Conair Girl Bomb to get the job done right. Conair Girl Bomb gives you the secret weapons for achieving powerful results with ease. Designed with women in mind, these tools boast the Sassy Girl Bomb Grip for unparalleled handling and precision, along with professional-grade blades to deliver results that you used to only get from men's tools. No more compromising. So, to all you incredible women out there, treat yourself to a little Conair Girl Bomb magic. Don't settle for anything less than perfection. Elevate your grooming game with Conair Girl Bomb. Available now at ConairGirlBomb.com or a retailer near you.
Let's get right back into it. So, as you probably know, Time Magazine released their Person of the Year, and it's Taylor Swift. I've seen a lot of conversation about whether she deserved it or not. I will say people forget that it's I think it's not supposed to be like the best person of the year. It's like the most impactful or important or like meaningful person of the year.
Yeah.
A lot of folks have said like, oh, it should be like Palestinian journalists or activists. Someone else I really respect said that it should be the concept of like disruptors or like resistors. So people who are, you know, challenging power structures and technology, challenging state power structures, which I thought was cool. Remember that year when it was just the, like you? So it was you, oh my God, Joey, yeah. It was me, Bridget, it was every listener listening, it was all of us.
Was that was like in the middle of like lockdown, right? Like, wasn't it?
When was that? Oh, Mike just chimed in. Did you hear that?
It was 2006. Okay. That I don't remember.
Oh my God.
I was 5 years old. But, or 6 years old. Sorry. I was 6 years old in 2006.
At 6 years old, you were Time Magazine's Person of the Year. Wow. Successful.
Yeah. Me and Taylor Swift. Yeah. No, there's always weird discourse about it. Like, people love to bring up one of the people always bring up is that like in the 1930s they made like Hitler Person of the Year one time and they were like, see guy, like people always use that as like the see they're bad and they keep picking and it's like, no, like that was the person in current events at that time that was causing the most
right.
weird shit going on. So like, yeah, I guess in that sense, like it makes, you know, Taylor Swift has a lot of power, has a lot of cultural power, has done a lot. But yeah, I don't know. I definitely agree. I think, like, I'm not surprised that the Time Magazine didn't do this, but, like, I would have, like, there definitely are, like, Palestinian journalists that I think have really, like, changed just so much of, like, how we've been talking about Palestine. I don't know. Like, it definitely, I think it would have been a much more deserved to maybe give it to one of them. No disrespect to Taylor Swift. But yeah, it definitely feels like there have been a lot of big things that have happened this year. Maybe some other people should have been considered. But yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of what people are saying. So because she was named Time Magazine's Person of the Year, she did this wide-ranging interview in the magazine and posed on the cover with her cat. So I have not actually read this interview, but I do know that Taylor has had, you know, a pretty big year with her Eras tour, which I did not know this, the highest grossing tour ever by a woman and the second highest grossing overall tour. You know, she's got this high-profile romantic relationship with an NFL player. People obviously had a lot of opinions about whether or not Taylor deserved or should have been the person of the year. And if folks listening have opinions, I want to hear them. Please let me know. However, it also seems like there is a new conspiracy theory emerging from right-wing pockets of the internet. Some of the biggest names on the far right are suggesting that Taylor Swift is being promoted right now as some kind of like PSYOP campaign to get people to vote for Democrats, question mark. Conspiracy theorist Laura Loomer, who I was going to say like who she is, and I was like, oh, she's not like a very important person. But I actually did not know this, that just last year, Laura Loomer narrowly lost a bid to represent Florida's 11th congressional district. Well, she tweeted, Taylor Swift has been named Time's 2023 Person of the Year. This isn't shocking since she's who the Democrats are counting on to interfere in the 2024 election. What would Democrats do without their idol who runs through men like water and spews anti-Trump drivel every chance she gets? Her entire world tour has become a Democrat Party voter registration drive. You might be asking, why would Taylor Swift architect a global tour across Latin America, Australia, Asia, and Europe specifically to register voters in the United States presidential election? Unclear how that would work, but that is what Laura Loomer says is going on.
I think it is really funny that everybody, like, listen, I'm a Taylor Swift fan, I will say. Like, I love her music. I did go to the Eras Tour. I've been following her for a while. Like, people really, from all sides, like, try to attach some sort of, like, political boogeyman thing to her, I think. Which is weird because she's, like, when I say apolitical, not in the, like, oh, I don't want to, like, oh, she just, like, doesn't want to talk about, like, she just doesn't, I don't think I've ever seen her say anything that's, like, remotely, like, political. Like, the most, she's spoken up a little bit about, like, feminism and stuff like that, but it's never, like, super in-depth. Like, I've never seen her, like, comment on, like, a specific sort of issue that's happening, which I think is interesting. I think it, like, mostly is just the fact that she has such a big platform, and she has such a big platform that's, like, mostly young women. But then, yeah, the other side is crazy because if she wanted, she has so much power. Like, she could, I remember seeing something about, it was after the whole, like, Ticketmaster thing. Like, somebody was like, somebody, like, needs to get her to just, like, say something offhandedly about, like, student loans or something so that people, like, start paying, or, like, there needs to, like whatever, there gains the sort of political momentum from the Swifties that we need to. But yeah, no, exactly. That is kind of crazy that she would have this whole global tour when, like, all, yeah, again, all she would need to do is make an Instagram post being like, I think you should vote for this person. And people, I mean, I think she could do it. I think if she wanted to, but, like, she's not going to, and she's never has. I don't know.
Yeah. And, like, she did post on Instagram for National Voter Registration Day. And, like, that single Instagram post did drive, like, I think it was 35,000 new people to register to vote. But registering voters is not the same thing as, like,
taking a stand on an issue.
Taking a stand, or, like, it's not like she said register and vote for Biden or, like, vote for a specific person. So it's like just driving registrations is nonpartisan, or it certainly should be nonpartisan, right? And so, like, this idea that, like, she's a shill for the Democratic Party is so curious to me. It makes me think, like, if you feel that Taylor Swift driving people to register to vote in general is automatically her being in the can for the Democratic Party, it really tells me a lot about what you think that, you know, people who are not Democrats have to offer young women voters, which is maybe not a lot. So former Trump White House advisor Stephen Miller tweeted, "What's happening with Taylor Swift is not organic," which is like the weirdest sentence I've ever seen someone tweet. Like,
yeah, first of all, weird thing to say to begin with. Weird way to phrase
real weird.
That. Also, it's like Taylor Swift has been a huge pop star for a while, and like, yeah, it's that is so weird. That is the yeah. It's the kids these days. It's their fault. Rock and roll and Taylor Swift.
That's exactly it. Jack Prosbiak tweeted, "The Taylor Swift girl boss PSYOP has been fully activated, from her hand-selected vaccine shill boyfriend to her dink lifestyle." If you don't know what dink is, it's dual income, no kids. To her upcoming 2024 voter operation for Democrats on abortion rights. It's all coming. I do find it interesting that they're calling her out for being like her having a dink lifestyle, as if just like not having children is some sort of like morally deviant way to live.
Yeah, that's so weird. Like, she's also like, what, like 33, 34? Like, she's not. I don't know. I guess that's
33.
Like 33. Yeah. Which I guess, yeah, I guess for like, that's a normal age to whatever to like get married and have kids. But like, I don't know. I know plenty of people that are like in that age range who aren't. And that's such a weird, like,
no.
Dink. I've never heard that phrase before, but that's weird. Her vaccine shill boyfriend too. Honestly, I think Travis Kelce, you know, this is my controversial opinion. Travis Kelce should have been Time Person of the Year. His tweet. So funny. Like, his tweets have been like the light in my news feed lately. So
Joey coming in with the hot take.
Her vaccine chill boyfriend. That's so insane though. They really like it is. Again, this is why I think it is so weird that they found her to be a target of all of this, because again, she is like the most mild, like has not said anything particularly controversial. That is so weird.
Yeah, and I talked about this in an episode years ago, but only recently has she been somebody who publicly identifies as a feminist. Like, she was on record in the early days of her fame being like, I'm not a feminist, I don't believe in men versus women, yada, yada, yada. And it wasn't until kind of later in the game that she was like, oh no, I'm a totally a feminist. And so it's curious to me that these people are criticizing for her for it. And I also think like the whole thing is really like gendered and racialized. Like, I don't think any of these people would ever say that part out loud, but like, they're giving her crap for not having children, being somebody who is in a relationship with another person who earns income outside of the home and not having kids, a dink. And you know, certainly they would not be clamoring for me, a Black woman, to have kids, or I'd be a welfare queen. And they wouldn't be clamoring for people who aren't cis women to have kids, because they might be like threats to children, right? And so like, it's very interesting who gets kind of smeared as doing something wrong just by virtue of them not having a child. And I guess I feel like you can't really talk about the kind of hate that she is receiving from these people without talking about like race and gender and sexuality. I did see this one kind of like men's rights influencer tweet, quote, "It's shameful and sad that a hyper promiscuous, childless woman aging and alone with a cat has become the heroine of a feminist age." And part of me is like, side note, this person runs an organization for what they're calling hard men, like masculine, manly men.
I mean,
because what is harder for a man to do than obsess over the dating life of a pop star on Twitter, right? Like, it's like they can't even keep their own ridiculous gender binary nonsense straight. Like, if you were like, I don't think like that is a paragon of traditional masculinity, caring who Taylor Swift is dating. Yet here you are making a big stink about it on Twitter, you know?
Right. Also, first of all, hard men. If you're going to call yourself hard men. The peak of heterosexuality. Okay. Also, okay, hyper promiscuous, like, I'm sorry, I remember, like, when she brought up sex for, like, the first time on one of her albums, and it was, like, I think it was Reputation, like, it was, like, way down the line, like, she was, like, again, very much the face of, like, respectable, nice white girl with her guitar, you know, for the longest time, and it's weird, because, again, she really, with the feminism thing, she's done, like, the bare minimum to, you know, stand up for human rights or whatever, and that apparently is too much. But yeah, no, it's just such a weird quote. It's such a weird quote, but like, not surprised. I also like remember, wasn't there, because like, what I was getting back to about like, I feel like people turn her and her image into like a lot, like the symbol of a lot of political stuff without it really, mm-hmm. really doing anything. And I don't think this one, I don't think was necessarily wrong, but I remember like a couple of years ago, there was a lot of stuff that was coming out about people talking about her music and her sort of persona that she's created and how that relates to like white supremacy and how like
right.
she kind of inadvertently has become this symbol of white supremacy. And like there, I again, it's been a minute since but I like, it's really interesting to see that switch within a couple of years, because she's dating somebody who's vaccinated, I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
Yes, I remember this very clearly. There was a time where in white supremacist corners of the internet, she was sort of the poster girl for like Nazism, essentially. Mm-hmm. And at the time, this was like going back like several years now. At the time, I remember doing an episode of Stuff Mom Never Told You, talk about like blasting the past, back when I was the co-host of that show with my friend Emily. And at the time, you could probably go back to the old Sminty archives and find it. I did not feel that she had done enough to like denounce that and be like, no, sorry, Nazis, I'm not your poster girl. But I do think it speaks to what you're talking mm-hmm. about, that she is someone that I think people project a lot of stuff onto and around. And I think that all of this, like, all of these weird tweets about her being on the cover of Time, I really think is an anxiety about the rise of single women voters, because like a lot of her listenership and fan base is younger women. And I think that it's about anxiety around how government has failed single women voters and what that means for the 2024 election. So we know that a lot of white women voted for Trump, but it's a little more complicated than that, because it's really married white women specifically. Married white women are more likely to vote conservative than their single white counterparts. So I think after the last few years with like big Supreme Court decisions on things like abortion, I think that folks are rightfully starting to worry about single women as a voting bloc and what this means. But here's my thing. It really kind of goes back to the episode that we did with Julia Mazur, who was like shamed by Tucker Carlson for just existing on the internet as a woman who is not married. I think that all that these people have to offer younger single women is shame and making fun of us and like the most tired jokes about cats and being alone and this and that, and like trying to scare us into marriage or invalidating our choices. Like, not everybody wants to be married or partnered, and there are so many ways to have a full life that doesn't include being married. And I just think that they don't have anything to really offer younger single women. So the best they can do is try to scare them into heterosexual marriages and then hope that that proximity to men will make them vote more conservatively. Like, I don't think they have anything real to offer. It's just like, all we can do is shame you and hopefully effectively scare you into marriage, which hopefully will make you vote more conservatively. And I think Taylor Swift, particularly how popular she's been this year, I think reiterates that anxiety that like, oh no, we really don't have anything to offer a pretty big section of the voting public. This might come back to bite us in the ass.
Yeah. Which is so funny, because it's like, you just sat like, clearly you don't understand how Swifties work, because you didn't even, again, you were in the clear. She wasn't telling anybody to go vote for Biden or do anything. Like, she was doing the bare minimum, telling people to go vote, maybe not even doing that again this year. I think she like literally did it one time. But like, she would have been fine. But it's like, no, now you've attacked Taylor Swift. The Swifties, like, they don't care who you are. They're going to learn who you are now, and like, they're going to start targeting you. And the Swifties are fucking terrifying. So I would not, like, I do think it would be really funny if like this was what led to like the downfall of like at least one of these people. If the Swifties could do that, I think that would be really beautiful and really poetic justice. But yeah, no, that's so weird. Why you gotta go after the cats? Like, she has a cat.
I know.
I love cats. They're great.
Cats are great. Yeah. Like, who doesn't enjoy a cat?
Exactly.
Joey, thank you so much for wading through all of this ridiculous tech news.
Of course.
You know, at the top of the episode, we got to know you a little bit better. What else are you working on? What have you got going on these days?
I'm so glad you asked. I recently have a show that is in the middle of coming out. We just had episode 4 released. It's called Afterlives, the Lalien Polanco story. I worked with Raquel Willis, who I think will be on the show soon.
Yes.
Little teaser there. But it was based on her incredible reporting on transphobic violence and the epidemic of violence against trans women of color in particular. In this season, we are talking about Lalien Polanco, who was a woman who died at Rikers Island prison a couple of years back. But yeah, you should definitely check out that show. I think it's a super important conversation to be having. I'm biased. I worked on it, but also, yes, you should definitely check that out. Episode 4 just came out. Episode 5 is coming out next week. Again, it's called Afterlives, the Lely and Polanco story. And of course, as always, if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me at Pat Not Pratt. That's PattNotPratt. Twitter, Instagram. But yeah, you should definitely check out that show. Find me on social media.
And we'll throw a link to Afterlives in the show notes. Folks should definitely listen. It is such an important conversation. And thank you for bringing it to us, because it's really special. And I actually have a little bit of news, which is that the other podcast that I host, IRL, Online Life is Real Life, which is an original podcast from Mozilla. Yep, the Mozilla that makes the browser that we all love, Firefox. Well, we have been nominated for an Anthem Award for responsible technology, and it would mean so much if folks could vote for us. If you could help celebrate this nomination by voting for IRL to win, you can go to tangoti.com/IRL. That's TANGOTI.com/IRL. That link will be in the show notes. Please vote for us. I don't want to get into it, but it would be really cool to win. And then maybe Mozilla will have me back to host it again. Who knows? Would love that. So please, please, please vote for us. It means the world to me to spotlight the voices and the stories of folks who are making technology like AI more trustworthy. And it's really also important to me to see those voices celebrated through winning an award like this. So please vote for us. Again, tangoti.com/IRL. Thank you so much. And thank you, Joy, for being here. Thank you, listeners, for listening. Be well, and I will talk to you soon. If you're looking for ways to support the show, check out our merch store at tangoti.com/store. Got a story about an interesting thing in tech or just want to say hi? You can reach us at hello@tangoti.com. You can also find transcripts for today's episode at tangoti.com. There Are No Girls on the Internet was created by me, Bridget Todd. It's a production of iHeartRadio and Unbossed Creative, edited by Joey Pat. Jonathan Strickland is our executive producer. Tari Harrison is our producer and sound engineer. Michael Amato is our contributing producer. I'm your host, Bridget Todd. If you want to help us grow, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at @RailsToTrails.
Looking for hair removal tools that not only deliver smooth results, but also empower you with a sense of complete control? Enter Conair Girl Bomb, your secret weapons for smooth, sleek results, made just for women. From the ultimate Girl Bomb grip and professional-grade blades, you don't have to compromise and settle for less. Conair Girl Bomb equips you with the precision and power previously reserved for men's grooming tools. So take your hair removal routine to the next level with Conair Girl Bomb. Available at conairgirlbomb.com or a retailer near you.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.